I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
They didn't ask to be in the situation of human trafficking. And so it's on all of us to go out there to identify them, to help them back into society without any shame or blame.
A new program in Mississippi aims to combat human trafficking. State Attorney General Lynn Fitch explains how the tap of a finger could help save lives in her state.
We have to talk about the scientific truth about contraception.
65 years of the pill, hailed by the secular world as part of women's liberation. A bioethicist explains how the church's opposition to contraception is part of safeguarding the true meaning of spousal union and love.
Biking for Babies is really into not only like providing awareness and funds to these PRCs, but also forming these young adults to be true kind of leaders in the culture of life.
Hundreds of miles of sweating gears. One cyclist shares how he gained a deeper understanding of what is at stake in the pro-life movement. A new report claims complications from the abortion pill are underreported. Now, one of the study's authors is calling for transparency and accuracy in documenting the dangers of chemical abortion. The report, released by the National Right to Life on Monday, says that complications from mifepristone occur at far higher rates than abortion advocates account for. The discrepancy is blamed on a, quote, deliberate effort by abortion advocates and their media allies to make abortion pills seem safer than they really are. It goes on to say women being told by abortion providers to conceal complications and present their symptoms as miscarriages. A lack of curiosity in the media and the abortion industry spin, which the report says recategorizes complications like hemorrhages, infections, and failed abortions as minor, which masks the true risks. The report's author, Dr. Randall O'Bannon, is calling for objective investigations into complications of the abortion pill, additional government scrutiny of the pill, and reinstatement of federal reporting requirements. Our sister news organization, the Catholic News Agency, has a closer look at this report. Be sure to visit CatholicNewsAgency.com to read more about it. President Trump is blasting Tylenol, alleging that the use of acetaminophen during pregnancy is linked to an increased risk of autism, while some studies have raised the possibility that the drug may be associated with autism. Other studies have not found a direct cause and effect. Tylenol's manufacturer, Kenvue, says that acetaminophen is the safest pain reliever option for pregnant women as needed throughout their entire pregnancy. Major medical groups continue to recommend acetaminophen as a safe painkiller during pregnancy. The president's statement was backed by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who says changes will be made by the Food and Drug Administration.
Today, the FDA will issue a physician's notice about the risk of acetaminophen during pregnancy and begin the process to initiate a safety label change. HHS will launch a nationwide public service campaign to inform families and protect public health.
According to a U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report published in April, the incidence of autism is on the rise, which one expert says is primarily due to a broadening of the definition and push for better screening in children. About one in every 31 children was diagnosed with autism by age 8 in 2022. Doctors prescribing assisted suicide for those suffering from mental health conditions, including eating disorders. It's a practice West Virginia Representative Riley Moore recently called in a post on X despicable. He also wrote that, quote, suicide is not health care. An amendment he proposed, which would require the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to investigate those cases, has been approved by the House Appropriations Committee. The committee stated it was, quote, concerned with the potential practice of referring, counseling, prescribing, or administering assisted suicide to individuals suffering from chronic mental health conditions, including anorexia and other eating disorders, unquote. A new study by Lifeway Research finds that slightly more than half of Americans are in favor of assisted suicide. 51% believe it is morally acceptable for terminally ill patients to request physician-assisted suicide. That number is actually lower than people surveyed in 2016, where 67% found it morally acceptable. The report also found that support is higher in urban and coastal areas of the U.S. and lower in rural and southern states. Some pro-life advocates say the shift is encouraging and highlight the growing importance of education on the dangers of this policy.
It is an unspeakable evil that we face with human trafficking, the scourge that it has been, the absolute human catastrophe that has developed and had developed.
That was Speaker of the House Mike Johnson at the third annual International Summit Against Human Trafficking. The summit welcomed Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, Border Czar Tom Homan, and other Republican lawmakers to speak about ways the U.S. government can work to end human trafficking. The $150 billion illegal industry currently victimizes an estimated 27.6 million people worldwide. That's according to the United Nations International Labor Organization. The UN data says 77% of all victims are forced into labor, and 23% are sex trafficked. Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch's office is addressing the dangers of human trafficking in her state. She shared with me the work her office and one anti-trafficking nonprofit are doing right now to combat this national crisis. Madam Attorney General, you recently announced that your office will partner with the national anti-trafficking nonprofit Safe House Project to launch Simply Report, a program to anonymously report suspected human trafficking. Can you tell us about it?
Well, this is an amazing new opportunity to be partnered with Simply Safe. You know, unfortunately, we have human trafficking in our state and all across our country. And they need us to be out there to help them, to rescue these young individuals, mostly young women, to help them on a new journey. They didn't ask to be in the situation of human trafficking. And so it's on all of us to go out there to identify them, to help them back into society without any shame or blame. Human trafficking is a $150 billion a year illegal business across our globe, and people are suffering. And we find that, you know, 50% or more are trafficked by someone that they loved and trusted, a family member, a boyfriend. And we do a lot of rescues here in our state. We have an initiative called Be the Solution. And so to add this part with Simply Safe and have a new reporting mechanism so that you can just hit the app on your phone if you see someone you think might be a victim. Because I always say, I'd rather know and the team so we can go out. We could be saving a life right then and there. So it's going to be a game changer for us to have that exposure for all Mississippians to hit that app and say, you know, we think this might be a victim, and then get the tip to law enforcement, and we can go in and check on that individual. And what we are finding, so many of these young women, they have children with them. They have babies. They have toddlers. You know, they have kindergartner. Mm-hmm. And so we now have a dual responsibility to help them, to help these children, and to really get them out of this dark space in their lifetime and get them together as a family unit and help them move forward.
That's incredible. And out of curiosity, what's your personal interest in launching these initiatives?
Well, again, very compassionate. I believe, you know, God put us on this earth to serve, and we have a mission in the Attorney General's office. And we always say, who'd we help today? How'd we lift someone up? How'd we make a difference? And the human trafficking, we really weren't doing that in Mississippi. And now we have trained over 500 law enforcement officers. We have federal partners, state partners, local partners. We've rescued over 330 victims in the state of Mississippi, and 22 of those were minors. And it's important to be out there to support our teams, to have law enforcement's back, and to know that we are helping those individuals. We're getting them out of a place where they move on from victimhood and become a survivor.
That's incredible. Well, thank you, Madam Attorney General, just for your initiative in this.
Oh, thank you again. It is really important. And as I talk to some of these survivors and I see their new pathway, and, you know, we've just brought all the teams together, you know, like I said, all the partners, but everybody from, you know, the counselors to the victims advocates to the sexual assault nurses to shelters. That really is inspiring and very empowering for these young women to move forward and to know that people love them and there is hope. And that's what we want to do, is provide hope for each of them.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you are in immediate danger of human trafficking, you should call 911. If you believe you may have information about a trafficking situation, call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. They are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All calls are confidential. We continue to follow state-to-state battles over SHIELD laws. SHIELD laws protect doctors in pro-abortion states from legal repercussions for breaking pro-life laws in other states. For example, prescribing the abortion pill to patients in pro-life states. That's exactly what happened in Texas. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton sued New York physician Dr. Margaret Daly Carpenter for allegedly prescribing abortion pills to a Texas patient. A Texas judge ordered Carpenter to pay some $100,000 in penalties, but a New York clerk refused to enforce the fine. So Paxton sued the clerk. And now New York Attorney General Letitia James is stepping in to defend New York's SHIELD law. This case and a similar one between New York and Louisiana could have nationwide implications, setting a precedent for how courts respond. 22 states and Washington, D.C. have SHIELD laws. This year marks 65 years since the Food and Drug Administration approved the first oral contraceptive pill. Within 2 years of its initial distribution in 1960, some 1.2 million American women were using the birth control pill. Since then, hundreds of millions of women have used the pill to prevent pregnancy. A little more than 2 years ago, the FDA approved the first daily over-the-counter oral contraceptive pill called the O-pill. It hit store shelves in March of 2024. The tiny tablet has been celebrated by the secular world as an instrumental part of the sexual revolution and was lauded as a tool for women's liberation. But many have argued it's done the opposite. The pill has ultimately led to the undermining of marriage and the dignity of life. The Catholic Church opposes the use of any contraceptive. Zofia Schoback spoke with the Catholic bioethicist about the impact of the pill has on a woman's body and further explains church teaching.
Despite the Catholic Church's clear opposition and condemnation of contraception, according to the National Survey on Family Growth, 90% of Catholics in the US alone have used at least one form of artificial birth control within their marriages.
In this case, contraception, usually it is done by, self-will. It's not just for a couple, it's usually by a self-desire.
The Church teaches that every marriage must remain open to life. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states that spousal union must achieve the good of the couple and the transmission of life, and that these two things cannot be separated. In the 1930 encyclical written by Pope Pius XI, Casti Connubi, on Christian marriage, the Holy Father emphasized that the use of contraception frustrates the natural power of marital union and labeled it as intrinsically evil. Dr. Maroun Bader, a Lebanese Maronite priest, theologian and bioethicist who obtained his PhD in Rome, now works as a lecturer and researcher. He narrows down the perspective on contraception to responsibility and truth.
Each act, as a sexual act, for example, is a human act, which means we do it because we are free. We have the free will to do it. And each choice has its consequences. I think we have to talk about the scientific truth about contraception, because usually people who use especially the birth control pill don't know what it can do.
In his encyclical Humanae Vitae, Pope Paul VI reiterated the words of Pius XI and wrote that transmission of life is the most serious role entrusted to a married couple. The 1968 encyclical warned that partners who grow accustomed to contraception may reduce each other to mere instruments. As well as the use of contraception being a danger to spiritual life, hormonal birth control can have severe implications on the well-being of women.
There are some psychological effects and like depression, some suicide attempts, and there are also the blood clotting that altered also the problem, which means there are the venous thromboembolism that could be also that could lead to death, and some autoimmune diseases like myocarditis, lupus, multiple sclerosis.
When a couple has serious or well-grounded reasons to space births, Catholic teaching allows couples to practice natural family planning.
First of all, they respect the female body and its fertility cycle. There are no harmful for the body of the woman especially. Then it helps also to strengthen the bond between partners, because fertility planning implies that both of them, the man and the woman, should be trying to decide together and to understand the process and to make it possible to happen, which means the relation between them, it will be, let's say, closer in the major of the cases.
The Church's teachings are deeply rooted in the natural law of human sexuality, sanctity of life, and the purpose of marriage in the way God intended it to be. For Catholics, abiding by these teachings means embracing love, responsibility, and the openness to life. In Rome, Zofia Trubak for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
The largest spanning pro-life event in the United States, Life Runners Across America Relay, is now underway. The participants walk or run 5,000 separate legs of the relay to make the shape of a cross over America. They often pause to pray outside abortion facilities along their routes. All four relays have launched, one in San Francisco, another in New York City, and two more in Austin and Fargo, North Dakota.
My hope for this year and in the years to come, that we can reach the youth with the truth of abortion, the real definition of abortion, before the world, through all that social media and all that those opportunities for the world to message the young people and dupe them with the lies that they present abortion as a solution, when in reality it's the greatest problem by definition. It's death.
Benedictine College will host the finish line of the relay on October 25th. Including a prayer from Archbishop Joseph Nauman of Kansas City. Relay Across America has been taking place for 17 years. As you know, pro-life laws continue to face legal challenges across the U.S. The Catholic News Agency recently unveiled three new interactive maps to help you keep track of where your state stands on life issues. The maps detail the legality of abortion, the death penalty, and assisted suicide. To access these three maps, go to CatholicNewsAgency.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page. You can then select your own state on each issue and learn the latest. Coming up, proclaiming the dignity of human life in a unique way.
I've been able to give up my own comfort when I'm on the bike. To suffer for the pregnant woman and also to suffer for Christ.
How one cycling organization is fostering the culture of life through redemptive suffering and raising funds for life-affirming pregnancy centers.
It is an experience of a lifetime, and it's definitely the start of something big.
Biking for Babies, a pro-life organization that proclaims the dignity of human life by combining cycling with the formation of young adults into missionary disciples of Jesus Christ. From March through August, Biking for Babies equipped young adults, both physically and spiritually, for a biking mission trip called the National Ride. It is a six-day, 600-mile trek that starts from different cities around the country and ends in two locations, That's St. Louis, Missouri, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The journey is an opportunity for intercessory prayer and a public witness to the gospel. The goal? To foster a culture of life through redemptive suffering and to raise funds for life-affirming pregnancy centers. In 15 years, Biking for Babies has formed 255 young adults who completed the national ride and pedaled more than 36,000 miles across the U.S. They have supported 158 pregnancy centers and donated more than $2 million to life-affirming work. I had the chance to speak with Joseph Massaro, a missionary and team leader with Biking for Babies. He shared how this program changed his worldview about the pro-life movement. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. How did you first learn about Biking for Babies, and what led you to get involved?
So I remember listening to a podcast on Spotify, and I felt called to get more involved in the pro-life cause. And I was in college at the time, and I was biking quite frequently, and I knew something had to give. Probably shouldn't, stop going to classes. I thought I could probably give up cycling. And then just about a week later, I was on Strava, and I just kind of found these groups of cyclists coming in around mid-July with a handle called Biking for Babies Missionary. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So I did some research and kind of found an organization that kind of felt like a God thing. It was just right time, right moment, and right people. It's beautiful.
That's incredible. And now I heard that there's a formation component to the program. Can you tell us about that and what the impact was in your life?
Yeah, sure thing. So the actual ride is in July, mid-July, around the 12th. But formation starts in March. So of course, there's a physical component. For our rider missionaries, we have to be able to ride 600 miles. So it starts off easy, maybe a couple rides each week. And then as the months progress, it gets a little bit harder. We ride probably close to five, maybe six times a week, doing 20, 25, 30 miles per ride. And then along with the physical, they're really into having both physical and spiritual and body and mind. So we go through prayers, we go read through the gospel of life, just kind of diving deeply to the documents and the prayers of the church and of the faithful to make a pro-life culture.
And do you feel like that you mentioned you had already been involved in the pro-life movement, how did this impact your engagement in the pro-life movement or your spiritual understanding of your work?
So it completely changed my worldview. When I was in college, I was like, yeah, the pro-life, it's a good cause. I want to, kind of work for that. But once I did Biking for Babies for my first year, I really came to understand that to be authentically pro-life, you have to be pro-life in your own spiritual life. You have to understand that the Lord loves you and cares for you and just wants the best for you. He's not going to let you down. No matter what. And once you kind of figure that out, then being pro-life, helping out and encountering these women, these fathers, and just unexpected pregnancies gets so much easier because you can rely on on the strength of the Lord, to be honest, to help them and to minister to them.
That's incredible. You're speaking of these families that you helped. Did you have a relationship with different pregnancy centers, or how does that play in?
So each missionary gets partnered with a pregnancy resource center, a PRC, from around their area. So I was able to be partnered with Embrace Pregnancy Care Center in Barberton, Ohio. And I was able to meet with their operating director and kind of just see what they do at these PRC centers. It's amazing. They perform miracles every day.
And Joseph, you're a returning writer, missionary, and team leader this year. What was it like to go through the formation program this time around in a leadership role?
It's definitely different. I was given this kind of really awesome way to be a part of this missionary, this mission this year. So for me, my formation starts in December. I had about 3 months off of Biking for Babies, if you will. So we first kind of figure out what it means to be a leader in the Catholic sense. We rely heavily on different resources from different ministries across the country and across like the Catholic Church. And it's just kind of figure out like what it means to be a true authentic leader and how we can kind of, you know, be as if like an icon of Christ on our teams. And then we get our team placement in March along with our other missionaries. And from there, we have this amazing opportunity, I believe, to really encounter these missionaries under our kind of leadership. We were able to meet with them one-on-one, you know, a couple times each month, and have just conversations with them and just kind of understand, like, you know, where they are, what they're doing, and kind of like why did they sign up to be Biking for Babies missionaries? Most teams have a kind of a equal number of returning missionaries and new missionaries. And I just, it's always a pleasure to hear people why they joined and then why did they come back? Because riding 600 miles, having that week on mission, it's a lot, it's tough. And people just keep on coming back for some reason. It's beautiful, it's just a great cause.
Yeah. And tell us, what does the demographics of the missionaries look like? Is it students or people from all walks of life?
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people from all walks of life. We have a fair amount of college students out there, and we just have a fair amount of like long-term missionaries who've been doing Biking for Babies for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and they kind of was able to like kind of shape the organization and, you know, kind of grow with the organization. Biking for Babies is really into not only like providing awareness and funds to these PRCs, but also forming these young adults to be true kind of leaders in the culture of life.
Joseph, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, so this is an amazing opportunity for young adults to give of their time and their, you know, their bodies and their like spiritual life. But if you want to, you know, be a part of the mission, if you want to be a mission partner, you can still go to a fundraising page, which can be found through our website, and give there and become a mission partner and become a missionary for the gospel of life.
Thank you, Joseph. From biking to marching, there was a strong witness to life in Pennsylvania on Monday. Listen to the energy of that crowd in Harrisburg. The Pennsylvania Family Institute partnered with the March for Life to unite men, women, and children on the steps of the state capitol to be a voice for the voiceless. It's great to see. And across the Atlantic, another March for Life. The crowds in Cologne, Germany were incredible. A rally revved up marchers with talks and music. Marchers were joined by bishops, priests, and other Catholic leaders. This marked the third year of simultaneous marches in both Cologne and Berlin. Both events, which gathered an estimated 7,000 people in total, were broadcast live by EWTN in Germany. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.